This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back to talk about the defense this week, week 8 against the Bears. A very much needed win, big win for the Ravens, big win, frankly, for me personally in terms of how it makes me feel during the week. It'll be a short week. Joining me today is someone who really understands that, and that's my wife, Maureen, who does a lot of the film study work with me. I've talked about that a number of times on the show, but we're going to talk a little bit about our process today in addition to getting a chance to meet her. Maureen, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks. I know for a lot of fans, when the Ravens win on Sunday, it's a good day for them. For us, it's a good week.
Yeah, a whole good week, definitely, in terms of wanting to watch football, wanting to rewatch the game and look at it again. I know we've had lots of questions over the years about the process, babe. Let's talk a little bit about that in terms of what we do during a typical week. So really starts for us even before the game. We come up to my office when we see the inactive list, and we make up a score sheet to be used at the ball game.
Right. I record the secondary player participation for who's on the play when we're on defense. Sometimes it's hard to see cornerbacks and safeties from the TV because they're off and off screen. They're in the backfield.
Yeah. So if the defensive backfield is often cut off, it's better now. It used to be terrible on SD, but with the current HD broadcast, it's a little better. You usually see 10 or even sometimes all 11 players. But you oftentimes safeties are kind of the invisible men of the defense that you can't pick up without either seeing it live or going to all 22 later. And that's a weight that we don't like to make. So we start off
better. Sorry. Even with a better camera technology, sometimes they like to focus on the quarterback and, you know, show his facial expression. And it's like, hey, I can't see who's on the field.
Yeah. That is very annoying. Anytime they do that and they cut too late to the start of the play, it digs into our ability to record formation properly.
Yeah.
So like we like to record in particular, and this relates to how the feet are set on offense, whether players are lined up as tight ends or wide receivers and running backs, of course. And to do that, we need to live with our definition set. We have to know how their feet are set effectively. So even feet makes you typically a tight end, whereas feet that are staggered and you know, more like you're one behind the other, that's a wide receiver typically on the outside. So anyway, just a little bit of glimpse into our own process. And we're very annoyed by camera angles that don't show the actual play, but instead want to focus on one particular
player, yeah. His personal reaction. Yeah, we don't really focus on the quarterback that much. We really focus on, you know, the whole team, because it is a team game. One person, and I say that, you know, one person doesn't make a difference, but, you know, here we are living with
without Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. And I think it really just goes to show how much of an MVP he really is.
Yeah. Anyway, we got lots to talk about in our process. I think we'll kind of fit it in over the show as we go through some of the individual sections of this. But a tough opponent that the Ravens faced in the Bears. But they were a little banged up coming into this game. They were missing their top three cornerbacks. They had some other injuries during the game. I think Shamar Stewart is the Bengals player, but
I don't have a roster in front of me.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. Shamar Turner, the defensive lineman, was lost during the game. They had a couple other injuries as well.
So I know the Bears coming into the game, they had the best turnover differential in the NFL, plus 11, and we had one of the worst, not quite the worst, but one of the worst. Was that really attributed to their cornerbacks? Do you know?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to it specifically in terms of who's generating all this, but oftentimes, even if it's fumbles that are occurring on sacks, the cornerbacks will have an impact on that by having good coverage that allows the pass rush to get home. So there's certainly a factor in there. It's very hard to separate, the quality of pass rush and the quality of coverage. They go together like pitching and defense in terms of how you prevent runs in baseball. So I think certainly the number of takeaways they generate, they led the NFL in takeaways with 16, was largely a function of what they did versus the pass, but it wasn't. I couldn't tell you whether it was all pass rush or mostly in the secondary itself.
And our defense really came alive this game. I know we've been somewhat short on turnovers and sacks all year. What do you think made the difference in this game?
Well, big turnover at the right time from Nate Wiggins. In sacks, they had one sack, but they really kind of had three with the two intentional grounding fouls, which was nice. I mean, it was really nice to see Caleb Williams get rid of one ball, and it was obviously grounding over in the left flat area. And then he got rid of a second ball where he almost threw the ball laterally. And if it had landed on the field and stayed there, and hadn't gotten to the sideline, it would have been recoverable for a fumble. But the ball basically went about a yard forward from the point where it was thrown as I saw it. But that was a dangerous play on his part.
Right.
What do the announcers say? And this is something we've made fun of for years. But what do they say at the beginning of every football game broadcast?
This game's going to come down to turnovers. They say that at the start of every game, and we always laugh at it. But yesterday it was true.
So it's basically like saying this team is going to come down to
who gets the most points.
Yeah, who's going to get the most points? It's about
saying the same thing. Yeah.
Because normally one team will get ahead, and that will force the trailing team to commit turnovers while they try and catch up. So it's not that the game, it's like teams run because they win. They don't win because they run. It's very much like the same thing.
Right.
Turnovers are caused by the fact that you're trailing in games. And that's what the Ravens need to generate more of. They haven't led enough games recently to really generate a good turnover ratio. In this game, they did. They led pretty much the whole way from 7-6 on, and they had a better opportunity to generate some turnovers in this game. All right. One of the big things we want to talk about was how it feels sometimes to be at the ball game.
You said we wanted to talk about our process. We kind of skipped over that. So
we can talk more process now if you want.
Okay. So after the game, we come home and we rewatch it again about two times. You rewatch it because at the game, I only recorded the secondary. And obviously, you need to record the defensive line and the linebackers. And then we enter that to make sure we have 11 players on the field for every play. And it's amazing because sometimes we find there aren't 11 people on the field. Every now and then, you'll find there are only 10. Generally, when there are 12, the referees catch it.
Yeah. The Ravens very famously once got away with 13 players on the field on a game-ending play in 1998 against the Raiders in a win. But it's very rare to get away with 12. You will sometimes play with 10, and the Ravens once in a game I'm trying to remember the year, maybe about 2013 or 14, played a single play with 9 players on the field, which is, it does happen.
I want to say it didn't hurt them.
No, they gave up a 4-yard play. It was, I think, Carr.
Could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, it definitely could have been. We'll get back to some process things, I think, a little bit more as we go. Because when we talk about the pass rush and things, we can talk about what our process looks like. But I want to talk about, you know, we're just at the game. And the Ravens deferred, so the Bears got the ball first. The Bears drove, and their first drive was significant, 13 plays or so. And then they had another drive where they had about 9 plays. And in between those, Huntley went 3-and-out with the Ravens offense. So after 2 drives, the Ravens did stop them both times, you know, for just field goals on those drives, which was awfully big in this game.
Yeah, but we were outsnapped 22-3, and that was not looking good for the rest of the game.
Yeah, so that was very one-sided. It certainly, it makes you fear that they're going to have a game of significantly fatigued rotational players, in particular the defensive line and the outside linebackers. But it's true. It's true. The secondary, it's true. The inside linebackers, true. Offense just does more substitution. And so your players on defense tend to be more fatigued as time goes on.
And that's been a factor in some of our losses previously this year, is the fact that the offense wasn't on the field very long and we did not win the snap count nor time of possession.
Yeah, big problem. The snap count to me is the really big one. I understand people want to talk time of possession and offense. You know, some time of possession gives you an opportunity to have more resting minutes on the sideline. So I'm not saying there's no value to that, but I think the high effort for a significant number of consecutive plays is what really makes defenses very tired. So if you have to rush the passer for 6 straight plays as a edge defender, for example, Merlin Olsen used to say there's nothing more tiring than doing that. So players can't do it forever, and they have to be replaced, and they have to be rotated through that. And so when you have a lot of snaps in a game, everybody can get tired by the end of it.
Right. And we're always checking for that. We're looking for hands on the hips to designate, is a player tired or not?
Yeah, that's one of the really big indication. They're breathing heavily and they're kind of slumped over instead of being upright and whatnot. And instead of talking to each other between plays and pointing around, they're huffing and puffing and hip holding at that time. Well, the Ravens didn't do themselves any favors in this game because they activated only 8 of the front 5 defenders. So they had 5 defensive linemen for this game. They only had 4 last week. They went with 4 defensive linemen, 4 outside linebackers. This week it was 5 defensive linemen, but only 3 outside linebackers, which is extremely rare for an NFL game, that you try and get through at a heavy rotational position with only 3 guys to rotate there. What made it worse was that Tavius Robinson, who, as I'm sure you know, Babe, is the Ravens' biggest snap eater among the front 5. He plays the most snaps of anybody. He's on IR. They talk about the team being healthy. The team's not healthy. The team's missing Nnamdi Matabike and Tavius Robinson and obviously Jackson. Those are about as big injuries as you can have in terms of making your defense degraded.
Was Peebles an active or a healthy scratch?
He was a healthy scratch. So they could have activated him, and instead they activated Taven Bryan, who was the guy they just signed about a week ago to the practice squad. Might have been before the Rams game, but he wasn't active for the Rams. In any case, they signed him. That was a very funny activation for me, because Taven Bryan is a guy who is 6'4", 291. He's a little bit longer than Peebles, and he's taller than Peebles. I'm not sure that's a big advantage rushing
passers. We always talk about arm length in the draft.
Yeah, that's true. to a lot of people's amusement, too. Let me just say that.
okay. To the Ravens, sounds important.
It is very important. The Ravens have indicated with every tackle they've ever drafted that it's very important to them. But forgot kind of where I was in this. Yeah, Taven Bryan, similarity to Aeneas Peebles is fairly significant. He's a guy who, you know, both of them are a little undersized. Neither of them is a guy who you really want in there at the three or five tech when you're trying to defend the run. They're both a little bit too small for that. Taven Bryan is 291, and Peebles, last list I saw him in, was 282. That's really undersized for that role. But both of them are undersized relative to the, you know, 310 to 320 kind of player you'll often see at a three tech, and even bigger guys that you'll see at your typical nose positions right now. And from what the Ravens otherwise could play there, you know, it's a huge step down. He weighs all of the Ravens other nose tackle options by about 50 pounds. So that's a big difference in terms of beef on the line. I thought perhaps they brought him in because they wanted to use him the way they would use Brent Urban occasionally, as an uncovered player who effectively can play the edge for you. But they really didn't do that. They just brought him in various rotational roles. He was usually in there with Okoye for his snaps, and Urban was in base packages and to play a little uncovered. We'll get to some of that later.
Has Peebles been ineffective this year? Is there a reason you think to bench him?
I'd say Peebles has been effective as a pass rusher. I think he's been one of the Ravens' better guys. The problem is they really haven't been in a lot of situations where they can get a lot of snaps out of Peebles, because they I think you can use him on obvious passing situations, and they've done that. And you generate a lot of obvious passing situations if you lead the other team for most of the game.
Points. Yeah.
And so they had that in this game. But they didn't have Peebles active to make use of it. So that was unfortunate.
And this is the first game we've really seen Mike Green come alive. And I think he got more playing time, correct?
He got a lot of playing time. He's been abused, frankly, so far by the Ravens in terms of the amount of playing time he's got. But he had 52 of 63 snaps in this game, so about 80%. And they leaned on him a lot.
He got his first sack, the only sack for the team.
That's true. They got a couple of intentional groundings, but that's absolutely true. But the other thing I want to say about Green was that he played 52 snaps, and Owe played 40, and Van Noy played 30. So they really.
You said Owe, and I think.
I'm sorry. You're right. That's not what I meant. Van Noy played 40, and Ajabo played 30. Thank you for correction. I appreciate that, by the way. There's a lot of that around this house.
My job is quality control.
She's not kidding, by the way. In terms of getting the sheet right and collecting all the information, particularly when we do the offensive line together, it's her willingness to say, wait a minute, you didn't give me a pass rush, go back kind of thing, or do all of the things as we go through this that make sure that the information is complete, that makes the project worthwhile. So really,
and that the yards tie out.
Yards
tie out. I'm kind of a stickler for that. Yeah. All right, so we didn't talk about Malik Ham. He's still on the practice squad. Why do you think he wasn't elevated?
Okay, well, that's the kind of the $64,000 question, because they activated, you know, they elevated Taven Bryan, so they could have also elevated with the same elevation Malik Ham and gotten an edge setter out of it, also activated Peebles for the game and had nine players, so they were taking less risk. And you know, they could have, if they wanted 10, they could have even brought up Taven Bryan and Ham and just not brought up Keandre Jackson, who was their second elevation. So it's just very strange to me that Malik Ham doesn't even really seem to be in consideration for snaps at a point like this, when it seems like the Ravens desperately need another edge defender. And more than that, they need an early down edge defender. They need somebody to be in there on first and second down to help try and set the edge for the run. And they don't have anybody to replace Tavius Robinson right now. All right. Was a game certainly where the offense was being more efficient, made the job a lot easier for the defense. So that was nice to see. They made it through. They had the unlikely win of the turnover battle that we talked about, because the Ravens actually came in 31st in the National Football League with a -7 turnover ratio, and the Bears were first at +16. Mm-hmm. So a big difference, and one where you wouldn't figure, having Tyler Huntley at quarterback, your situation is going to improve in terms of the likelihood of winning the turnover battle. But they got it done, and they generated the most important play of the game defensively.
I think Huntley might have had his best game ever.
I would agree. I don't think he's played this well ever otherwise. Every other game they've ever played with Huntley has been an absolute dogfight to try and win the game. This was the only one that was semi-comfortable. And I wouldn't even say this one was really comfortable, but Huntley was very effective personally.
Yeah, he had over 100 passer rating.
It looked like
what was Williams' passer rating, by the way?
Williams' passer rating, I'll get that for you real quick. So Williams had a passer rating of 77.2. No touchdowns and one interception. That's pretty bad. No.
Yeah, and I think that's really because he faced a tough defense.
Well, he's a good young quarterback, and they did not do a great job of containing him, which we'll get to when we talk about the pass rush a little bit, but they were still effective containing him with coverage. And you know, one of the things about that was interesting about this was that the Ravens really effective when they didn't juice up their pass rush with a lot of scheme or numbers. And I do want to kind of go through that a little bit later when we talk about the pass rush. But let's move on to some other general schematic elements. They had the secondary dressed 9 in this game. They had two players who really didn't see any playing time. That were Tampa and Martin. Didn't really see any time.
We've seen Tampa and Martin in previous games, and they have not been effective when they've been on the field, correct?
I mean, Martin has had troubles. There's no doubt about that. Lowry had troubles, and he's already gone. Tampa, I'd say, has been okay, but you know, the Ravens still are committed to Tampa on the roster next year because he's one of their younger corners, and they need to keep him around.
How long has he been in the league?
This is his second year in the league, but okay. They also have Awuzie is likely gone. He's not signed beyond this year. Alexander will certainly be gone. And then Humphrey is a guy that they have to make a big salary decision about. There's $7.3 million in cap savings, or they have to go through with $7.3 million. They have to make a decision on whether or not he's worth that for next year. And he may
not. How old is Humphrey?
I think he's 29. So,
but so we talk about in baseball how players, once they turn 30, really become a lot slower. Cornerback is a position where you really need to be fast. Do you think paying a lot of money for a 30-year-old cornerback is a good idea?
I am almost universally against paying older cornerbacks to come in. I mean, there have been exceptions.
I think Humphrey's had injuries almost every year. Like, I don't see that getting better as he gets older.
Yeah, probably not. I think the thing that they would hope for from Humphrey is that he would be able to move to safety. And there's been some other things that have come up about him recently in terms of, having the podcast and not being maybe fully focused on football and whatnot. Humphrey actually will not turn 29 until next July. Sorry, will not turn 30 until next July.
Is this podcast talking about football?
I think it's talking about a lot of things, huh?
Okay.
I got to admit,
I haven't listened to it.
Yeah, I haven't listened to it either. So I think it's a lot of things he's really talking about.
Okay.
One of the interesting deactivations for this game was Sanusi Kane. So he's really fallen on the depth chart, by the way. This summer, he kind of made progress at camp and had looked like he was distancing himself from the other options as the team's number three corner, safety rather. And then they added Lowry at the last moment as a UDFA at safety, and he made the team. And then the first opportunity that there was some playing time, Lowry moved ahead of Kane and was playing a start in a full game. Well, Lowry's since been cut, but Kane's star is not ascending. Alohi Gilman they traded for in exchange for Owe, and they're playing him on the back end. So I don't even know where Sanusi Kane is on the depth chart, but this is very unusual because he's thought of as being kind of second in command, maybe on the special teams. I might think of him that way behind Jake Hummel. And yet he didn't even dress for this game. It's a healthy scratch. So quite a fall for him. Now the Ravens, in terms of the 53-man roster, most of their guys are healthy. So they had to make some healthy scratch decisions coming out of the bye. Still very surprised by that.
And Alexander was also inactive.
Yeah, Alexander was inactive. He hasn't been active very often this year. I'm trying to remember exactly what games he was active. There might have been two games he's been active. He was active against Buffalo, played terribly, and then I think he came back and he played some snaps in another game. I don't think he's in the Ravens' plans for the rest of the year. I could be wrong, and it could be a matter of Ravens have a couple injuries, and he might jump on the field. But I think Tampa is clearly ahead of him on the depth chart, and Tampa's not playing at all. And it looks like Martin is ahead of him. And I'm not sure what the reason is there exactly, but Martin is a slot corner, so it gives the Ravens some depth there if they need to, if something happened to Kyle Hamilton, for example. They probably, the first choice is they go to Marlon Humphrey after that, but they would also have Martin available.
Do we want to talk about Hamilton playing essentially slot corner this game?
We can. I mean, Hamilton has been effectively only the slot corner now for the last couple of weeks, and they haven't used anybody else there. Now, he does move over to play dime, and we'll get into that in the packages in just a minute if we can wait for that. But it's amazing how effective Hamilton has been close to the line of scrimmage. I mean, did you feel like he's wasted on the back end when he's starting on there, or they're playing a too high shell
I like him as a safety. I think he's good at that. When he's playing cornerback, it kind of tells me that the other cornerbacks, they don't really have faith in, or he's there to supplement somebody who's not his caliber. That's kind of what it says to me.
Yeah, it's just like he's a one of one player, and I don't think there is anybody his caliber. So he's the ace of trumps, as I always say, when he plays at the line of scrimmage. He takes away the strong side of the football field. You can't throw a wide receiver screen effectively to his side if you do so at your own peril, let's put it that way, because he'll get right off a block and make a tackle. It's funny, they did have some sort of a little swing pass they threw to the left side, and Hamilton was kind of on the inside of the play, and Wiggins had trouble making the tackle to the outside, which it happened in the first half, I'm pretty sure. But that was the only time that I've seen recently where Hamilton hasn't like immediately been involved in a screen pass to his side of the field. So you get that. Then you get Hamilton, the pass rusher, and we really saw that in this game. So Hamilton got the pressure that led to that 14-yard intentional grounding against Williams, which basically took him out of one drive. All right. Let's talk a little bit. I think we've talked about the secondary enough here. Let's go to the two. Some of the Bears' effectiveness in terms of moving the football, they certainly did so effectively for the first couple of drives, and they were 6 of 13 on third down for the game. So that's a little higher than the Ravens would like. What was
nice? I think it's better than we've gotten in prior games this year, correct?
We've probably been about that overall. Yeah. What's better is that they failed their one fourth down attempt, and that's been something the other teams have been absolutely massacring the Ravens at is succeeding in pretty much all their fourth down attempt. They gave up 9 in a row successful at one point. And then I think it was in the Rams game. Yeah, it was in the Rams game. They failed in their very last fourth down attempt that kind of kept the Ravens in the game. Mm-hmm. And it was inexplicable because they probably should have kicked a field goal under the circumstances. Right. So they kept
the Ravens. Why kick a field goal when every other team who's played us has been successful converting fourth down?
I'll give you the answer to your rhetorical question.
they would have won the game.
Yeah, they would have been much more likely to win the game if they kicked the field goal. Yeah. So anyway,
I don't blame them for trying, but I'm glad to see that the Bears did punt.
Yeah, the Bears they punted some, but they punted I think on a fourth and one in this game, but they also went for it on fourth and one at the end of the game, and end up being Williams threw the ball away in the back of the end zone even though there was a wide open receiver there. I was only with 29 seconds left, but it prevented an onside kick and all the drama associated with that we didn't want. Right. To potentially lose the football game there. What else we got here? The run defense was pretty good again at 4.2 yards per carry. They didn't have their quality edge setters in the game, and they still did a reasonable job of holding down the run in this game. They need to find more outside linebacker depth. That's an ongoing problem. I guess we talked about that earlier in terms of whether they get that from the practice squad in Rucker or Ham, or they now have Carl Lawson, who'll be a body available hopefully in the Miami game. Now, he's signed and he's on the practice squad. The issue with Lawson is that he's just another pass rusher. I don't mean that as he's just another pass
rusher. Just another?
Because that's probably true as well.
Can you have too many?
Yeah, that's the point I want to make sure that I avoided here, was that he's a pass rusher. He's a situational pass rusher pretty much only, is what my point of making. So he's not a guy who addresses the loss of Tavius Robinson in any kind of direct way either. So they could keep Mike Green on the field on some early downs, but then that's minimizing his value if you don't have him on obvious passing downs. So I don't know exactly how they're going to use Lawson, but I do presume he's going to be active for Miami. May even be brought up to the roster, and if that's the case, they're going to have to get rid of somebody. I'm not sure who that'll be. I guess it could be Rasheen Ali. It could be Martin. It could be Higgins. There are kind of multiple guys they could cut loose.
Talk about Jones, but wasn't he effective versing the rush?
Yeah, he's generally effective at holding his ground. I think he's been more effective when he's played as a three tech. So the Ravens have all these nose tackles that they play on the inside, and they basically have a choice of which two nose tackles would you want out there on any given play. And all of those guys are used to playing zero or one, but now one of them gets to play the three tech also. And when they play the three tech, the big advantage they gain is they get to go one-on-one against a guard who's not typically able to block your typical athletic nose tackle one-on-one. So when Jones is out there in particular, that's been a good advantage for the Ravens. He had a good game, I thought, in this one. Got some pressure, played the run well. I thought he was one of the Ravens' more effective defenders.
Yeah, and we've been hurt by the other teams running all over us this year.
Yeah, that's been a problem in the games where they just couldn't get anybody stopped. They finally got the run defense, right, I think, shored up a little bit these last two games against the Rams and the Bears now, but we're back to the other problem of how to stop the pass.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Let's talk some packages for a minute, because the Ravens are a little odd in terms of how they're assigning their packages. So they got.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
No one plans for hair loss. But through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
Life is unpredictable, but how you prepare for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. Whether to cover debts and routine expenses or even invest the money and earn interest over time, With Policy Genius, finding and buying life insurance is simple. You can compare quotes from top insurers and could find coverage that fits your needs and your budget. Plus, they offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. It's an easy way to feel good about and plan for the future. No wonder Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to PolicyGenius.com to compare top-rated life insurance policies, get your lowest quote, and make a smart move in under 10 minutes. That's PolicyGenius.com.
Kind of a second and one near the goal line, and they substituted in a jumbo package. And I think the Bears must have made a substitution to allow this, because we had one of the biggest mass exoduses I've ever seen. Six guys went out and six new guys came in. First of all,
and it was late, because I remember trying to record who was in the secondary, and I was like, I can't see their numbers. Too many men went off and too many came on. I couldn't see who that was.
It's kind of the perfect storm too, because we're our seats are basically at the 50-yard line, and we when the ball's at the goal line where it was, it's as far away as it ever is from us, right. And you can't see the numbers down there. You can't really see the thing well. If we're in the upper deck, we could probably see it better, but we can't where we are, where we sit, we can't see it well. So we depend on having to come back and do a game like that on TV. But normally, this is a process thing. Is you really go by the substitution, by who's on the field to start with, and then by this, you watch the substitutions.
Right. Game. Yes. Yeah. That's how I record that.
Okay. So if you see on they have the base defense on a first down, and then you see Brent Urban go off the field and a slot cornerback come on the field, which they don't really do it that way this year, but they have in past years, then you record the one additional player in the secondary, and then you know it's
right. I know everybody else is the same from the previous play. Yeah. And I'm also pretty anal about checking, are there 11 guys on the field? So I'm quickly looking to see.
I've kind of forgotten about that about you, but that used to come up all the time. Maureen is the 11 men on the field Nazi. Oh yeah. My God. We're at a game and she go, they've got 12 on the field. They've got 12 on the field, or they've only got 10 on the field.
Invariably, so someone on the sideline, a coach will throw, we'll call a timeout.
So, all right. Well, I've completely forgotten that about you. I don't think that's really come up as much this year as it has in the past, but that has been really
funny. There was one hilarious substitution, where the Bears had made a substitution, and I think it was Brent Urban was just sauntering very slowly. And then he noticed when the referee had stepped away from the line of scrimmage, I think one of the assistant coaches on the sideline was signaling for him to hurry up now, get off the field before it's a penalty.
Okay. So all that was intentional. So that happened. That's a great, great point. But it happened with about 5:20 or something left in the ball game. And so every second that the Ravens can milk the clock for, is a good second lost. And I think it was the wide receiver Zacchaeus or something had caught the previous ball and he had to leave the field. And so because the Bears made a substitution, the Ravens are able to also substitute. And their natural tendency is substitute as late as possible and then get your guys off the field as late as possible and see how long the official will stand over the ball and prevent the snap. While that's happening, the play clock runs and the game clock, more importantly, runs. Sometimes the Ravens have worked it out that they get a delay of game called on the offense because they can't get up the line and snap it quickly enough after the official moves out of the way. That's usually a problem where the offense substituted way too late. But
their offense was already...
they were set.
They were set. They were in position. They were just waiting for the official to get out of the way so that they could snap the ball. And luckily... he sped it up when he got near the sideline and it wasn't a penalty.
That is absolutely classic Ravens. And you see this kind of gamesmanship. The Ravens defensive coaches, I think Harbaugh is probably very aware of it too, because a lot of game management things like this, including, remember the two intentional holdings, the one in the Super Bowl and the one against the Bengals, where they were on a punt and they basically were tackling every single player who might have gone in and blocked the punt because they were going to take an intentional safety on the play.
Right.
And they just wanted to milk as much clock as they could. The Bengals game, they actually ended it. on such a play, ended it on a safety, and the referee says, by rule, the game's over. Yep. And that was the end of it. And then on the one in the Super Bowl, it milked the clock down to 3 seconds, and they had to have the free kick. And then
that was the first time I'd ever seen that done in a game.
An intentional safety?
Yeah.
My guess is you've probably seen others. Okay. So I could point you to some others. The 2006 Chargers game, there was an intentional safety. You were there for that. Okay. I know that. So
all right.
You've seen it before. All right. Okay, so let's talk packages. Anyway, this jumbo one, they ran from the 1 yard line. I don't know if people caught it, but Jake Hummel cut in, made a great play to stop up that play for a loss of one that kept them out of the end zone for an additional play. They did score on the next play, but still was a good, nice play by Hummel there, who was one of the six guys inserted, and that was his only snap. Then they played base for four snaps. Now they had three runs for 15 and one pass for 21. Nothing.
Would you call that effective?
No, I wouldn't call that effective, but it's also a small sample size. So we won't get too concerned about that. Yeah. The big nickel is what they played most of the game. That was very effective. They had 36.
They've
snaps.
Done a lot of that this year, right?
Yeah. I mean, since they moved Hamilton back, that's all they play. So the big nickel this year was 36 plays for 132 yards, 3.7 yards per play. And the one turnover was in it. They might have had intentional groundings in this too, which are effectively sacks that don't get recorded. The yardage doesn't get recorded properly, in my opinion. But they had those big nickel snaps were terrific, and Hamilton being there is one of the real positives. They played one snap of jumbo nickel. Now you've heard me talk about this one in the past, folks out there listening. But jumbo nickel is when you put in an extra down lineman and replace a inside linebacker. So it's a way to get more beef at the line of scrimmage. It's a better run defense. And when you can afford to do it is when you have safeties who really understand their run fits behind you. And one guy that really helps for the Ravens to do this is Kyle Hamilton being at slot corner, because you know he's going to give you good run defense on that play. So that's something that's open to the Ravens. They haven't used it a lot this year, and it's kind of surprising to me that they maybe haven't tried to do a little more of it. They're obviously a little, they're happy with Roquan, certainly in terms of how he's playing now, particularly after this game, but I think they're also happy with how Buchanan has played. So they want to make sure there's a spot for Buchanan or Simpson on a lot of plays. And so they still want to play I wanted to call a standard nickel, but a regular big nickel where they have two inside linebackers on a lot of plays. But they anyway, the jumbo nickel, they played one time, and by the way, it's a 10-yard run, so it's not like the strategy of using jumbo nickel really worked in that case.
I thought the one thing that didn't work was the dime, and I was getting annoyed at the game that they kept trying it.
Yeah, they do it in obvious passing situations. So the big thing they're doing there is pulling Buchanan off the field to get him replaced and put in another player. Or two players, but they put Awuzie in as a corner, and they move Hamilton into that Will linebacker spot. So he stands next to Roquan on the field, still lined up in the box, still where he can, you know, do a lot of damage as a zone coverage player or as a pass rusher. Oftentimes it's a pass rusher in this game, but they made good use of him, and they just didn't have success on those dime plays. A lot of them had some pressure and they still got off a big pass, or they had an ATS and they didn't have a big pass. I mean, there's a lot of some weird stuff that went on there, but 17 snaps a dime in this game, 172 yards, says 10.1 yards per play. So as much as they were very successful with the big nickel and having Hamilton in the box for that, they were less successful, obviously, in dime. And there's not a pattern that I would pick out from this, but they did certainly give up some big plays late in the game. In, I don't know if you'd call it garbage time, but they gave up a 42-yard play that let the Bears get into scoring position when they were down two touchdowns. Probably shouldn't get behind the defense in such a situation, but they did. And they gave up a 25 and a 27-yard play. So they had a number of big plays they hit on. And, you know, they're facing a very, frankly, talented group of wide receivers, and it's the most difficult game I would say for Kyle Hamilton to play the slot corner position is one where they have all these talented corners that are going against him, like DJ Moore might be their slot receiver. That's a mismatch for Kyle Hamilton to have to cover him on any kind of a vertical route is extremely difficult. And that's who got beat for the 42-yard play. All right. Zero standard nickel. The uncovered nickel. I didn't want to talk about that really briefly. So the uncovered nickel, the Ravens play only one outside linebacker on the field. I thought they would do this more because they have Brent Urban and Taven Bryan both active. And so they would be able to play them on the edge, be outside of the offensive tackle on the offensive tackle's shoulder as where a five tech normally plays. But instead of doing that, you really have run defense responsibilities on that play, edge setting responsibilities. Let me put it clearly. You always have run defense responsibilities as a defensive lineman. But you know, that's something Urban as a space denier, I think, would be particularly good at. They tried it on the first two plays of the game. And let me go back to that real quickly in our sheet here. So the first two plays of the game, they had it and is a pass for 18 and a run for one. Then they took it off the field. They only went back to it once on the second drive. And that one went for it's that first
4 yards.
Yeah, 4 yard pass. Exactly. You must be looking at it right now too. So, yeah. So anyway,
I'm like 22 minus 18.
Yeah, right, there you go. Okay. See, this is what I have to live with all the time. You're right. So anyway, 4 yard pass on that play, but they obviously decided at that point that they didn't really want to do it because they had the personnel to continue using this uncovered nickel, and they had plenty of, you know, early down plays that they still could have tried it, but they stopped after the first two drives. And I don't know whether it was the Bears moving the ball effectively that was the thing that made them do it or what it was, but for whatever reason, they decided, no, can't use that uncovered nickel anymore. All right. How are we doing on time here? We are around 41 minutes. I'm going to go ahead and talk about the pass rush a little bit. You know what? I think we have some questions in the mailbag. Let's go to them because I think Maureen's not going to join me for the second part of this show. And I want to make sure we hit on a couple of ones. So we have two of them. First one is from Matthew Simmons. Thanks, Matthew, for contributing to hashtag film study mailbag. He says, do you keep track of resources the opposition dedicates to stopping edge guys? So, for example, how many set and chip blocks like you do with the Ravens offense, when the Ravens have a guy worthy of such things. So obviously dig on the Ravens pass rush that he doesn't think there's a pass rusher that's worth making a chip block on. They did have a couple chip blocks on Mike Green in this game, by the way.
The short answer is no.
Yeah, we don't keep that. And we probably should, Matthew. That's a good point. I've thought of occasionally in the past, but it probably should go right on the sheet with the I can think of one. The defensive score sheet, would it be? It should be right below the pass rush information that we maintain normally. So you have the rush, the zone drops, the ATS BOQ pressure, and right below that could be a 1-1 or a 1-0 or whatever it would be for a set and chip blocks like we do on the offensive score sheet. It's a good idea, Matthew. We'll think about implementing that and see how we could do that, which probably means we'll do it next season at the earliest. The way we often work to add things during the off season.
And just to let everyone know, if we add something, we often go back and do it for every previous game the Ravens have ever played.
Well, we've done that occasionally. I'm not saying that's something we do for everything, but we did do it for things like the pass rush to try and get that right. But I don't know if we go back and do it for chips and set. To be frank, Maureen, we've gone back and we've not reevaluated the offensive line by the current scoring methodologies and expectations. So for example, a simple example is the new scoring for penalties that we have.
We have not retallied that.
Yeah. And that'd be
recalibrated that'd be, it. Mm-hmm.
You've got 20 years of scoring we'd have to go through that for.
And, the penalty, you know, I don't know that it would really change anything because those guys are no longer in the league playing today. So how relevant is that?
It wouldn't change for that. It would change for like what's a historic expectation for play. And you could For example, for center, we have, you know, multiple centers who've been at various levels of play, and you've got Matt Burke, who's, you know, stands tall, and you've got, you know, Linderbaum, who's a level beneath him, Jason Brown, who played pretty well, maybe is fairly similar to Linderbaum, and then you have a bunch of other guys who had a lot of trouble, and Zuda and players like that. And then some of the
one
guys
guy I remember was very slow getting out of his stance. You know who I'm talking about?
At center? That's really bad.
No, not at center. Yeah. He wasn't at center. I think he was a tackle.
Okay. The defensive tackle who was super slow getting out of his stance was Dwan Edwards. Yeah. Is that who you're thinking of?
Yeah, probably. Okay. Incredibly slow.
It was like you're watching something funny. By the way, I don't know if people noticed it. Worth taking a look. I think it's the Ravens' final touchdown, but it might have been the second to last. Take a look at the all 22 of the extra point, which is not all 22 footage I would normally recommend viewing because there's not a whole lot there. But I thought that Travis Jones might not be a guy who's regularly on that unit because he never got out of his stance on the play, and he just waited to get completely bowled over by the opponent opposite him. And if you've ever seen Travis Jones get knocked on his ass, that's not an easy thing to do. First time I've ever really seen it. And he never got out of his stance. It's a weird thing. So I think it's on the last touchdown. Take a look at the extra point, and you'll see Travis not getting up properly out of that.
All right. Is there another mailbag question?
Yeah, there was one other mailbag question. Let's do that. Yeah. Get control of the show again, Maureen, here. You're letting me go off on a tangent. This is rabbit holing, we call it. Okay, so Brendan Way asks a question. He says, with Hamilton moving up to box, has Humphrey shifted primarily to the outside, or do Hamilton and Humphrey split time at slot corner duties? I'm curious to see how Humphrey has fared when asked to play outside versus slot. Okay, so great question, Brendan. So Humphrey plays every big nickel snap on the outside now. Okay, and then when I say that, Humphrey just returned this game. So we don't know if that's the way it'll be every week. It may be a case where Humphrey may be rotated in some weeks if they have another slot corner they want to take a look at. But Humphrey plays every time that they're in big nickel, that's Humphrey on the outside, and Humphrey is opposite Wiggins on those plays. But when they play dime, then Humphrey moves back to the slot, which is maybe his more normal position of recent years. And Hamilton moves to play weak side linebacker. So Humphrey would have the coverage responsibility of somebody like DJ Moore in this game in the slot. I don't have anything that looks at Humphrey separately for his slot play versus his outside play. That's a good idea to maybe look at. Humphrey also is like Hamilton in a way because he brings a lot of physicality to that position, and he'll rush the passer. He did in this game, for example. Probably did so when he was in the slot. Let me check his one blitz that he had. I believe that came from the...
The other thing that we saw Humphrey do is try and take the ball out on every opportunity that he could, and one particular, I think it was Humphrey, where it looked like we were screaming in our seats thinking that it was either an incomplete or interception or recovered fumble, and ended up being none of those, that it was a tie of who had possession and they gave it to the receiver.
I've got to understand why they called that play that way. I really do. And I think the official... forget if it was McCauley or who it was who was doing the game on TV. He seemed to say something like, they can reverse a forward progress call and make it a turnover if the ball came loose immediately on the hit. And so I guess the point would be there that if it came loose immediately on the hit, then you'd know that that they couldn't have called the forward progress prior to that. No, they couldn't have called the forward progress before that, because the problem with forward progress is they can't hear it on the replay, so they can't hear the whistle. Well, they could. They could get material that would allow them to hear the whistle on the in synced up with the all 22. You just have to have a special kind of whistle to do that that goes to the league office, or, you know, is recorded elsewhere that you can hear where the whistle is along with the film. So it wouldn't be a problem for them to do it. But once they whistle it, they've essentially whistled the play dead. And so, you know, the offensive player can say, well, I can give up the ball now, kind of thing. And that would be his claim. So anyway, the ball was not knocked loose immediately. It was pried free by Humphrey. It was very clear to me that was just a ball that was pried free. It wasn't 100% clear that it would have been a recovery, but I think it would have been at least the ball would have been moved backwards either 3 or 4 yards, pretty much back to the original line of scrimmage on the play. And any way you like it, I absolutely love the aggressiveness by Humphrey to pry that ball free. It was a strange play, though, wasn't it? We don't see one like that very often.
Yeah, it was very disappointing from our perspective, but it was, you know, even the announcer was saying, well, you know, tie goes to the receiver. You know, this is like, I could see this call being, or this play being called either way. It's, you know, like when you're in your backyard playing with friends, you know, who gets to decide? And whoever is deciding, that's the final answer here.
All right. That was like the old Friends episode where they're playing Thanksgiving football and they both think they have possession and they stay out there for hours. Yeah. All right. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about what we record for the pass rush and what we record in terms of notes. And then we'll cut the first episode and then I'll come back and I'll talk pass rush and some individual performances in the second half. But in terms of the pass rush stuff that we record, we record the numbers, but we also record the whether or not things are blitzes or simulated pressures, and we have to compile that information.
Stunts. We separate stunts from blitzes.
Stunts from blitzes, then simulated pressure. Deceptive pass rush. So those are things that have more than one element of deception with them. One of the things about this game that really didn't work out for the Ravens, and I'll go into it in the second episode here, is that the Ravens, whatever they tried in terms of numbers or deception, didn't work in this game. Everybody's talking about how with this group of players, they absolutely need to go crazy with scheme to try and find a way. And honestly, that wasn't
effective. Time wasn't effective either.
Oh, I think we heard that somewhere before. All right. So the other thing we do is once we're done with all the mundane scorekeeping, which is just who are the players on the field, what's the pass rush, all that information. We also take notes on every individual play. So we go back through the game entirely, one play at a time.
Not necessarily every single play, but every play that was either over 6 yards long or there was pressure or some event.
It ends up being, I think, about 15% of plays, maybe we don't do something. So if we see a 3-yard run, I have to see something special occurring at the line of scrimmage with regard to somebody taking something away. Yeah. In order to make that a worthwhile, to have a.
But if it just looks like a vanilla play, we just,
We don't take a note on it.
Yeah, we don't take a note. Yeah.
And, but we do take notes on most plays. We try and get the targets for who was the defender. But we have our own shorthand for doing it that you'll sometimes see in the articles. And this is one thing I don't think is necessarily always well described. But if you see, and I'm going to go to something that was in the article this time and let Maureen explain it in terms of what this means, because it's really our shorthand for doing it. What's a good one here? Okay. So, we've got, if you want to go to it too, babe, it's Q2 022 Marlon Humphrey's play.
Yeah, I don't have that in front of me.
Okay, so I'll read it to you. So it's Q2 022. So somebody sees that at the front. That's pretty obvious.
Time of the game.
So quarter to 22 seconds remaining.
Yeah.
And then it's the shorthand note, and we call this a racing form note because racing form notes are very short, and they'll talk about, you know, it, 2 to 4 words often what happened to a horse is like faded badly or bled or, you know, all kinds of other things you can have for a horse performance. But in this case, it's he and Smith tackled T.E. Loveland PL9, 6+3, 2 circles. So first of all, giving you the opposing player, it's Humphrey and Smith tackled T.E. tight end Loveland. Pretty obvious.
Yeah.
PL9 means what?
9 yards pass left for 9 yards. 6+3 is 6 yards for the pass, and then yards after catch, 3 yards.
And then two circle
where he was on the field. So we divide the field up at 1 through 5, one being one sideline, five being the other sideline, and, you know, three being in the middle.
So three is between the hashes, two is between the numbers and the hashes, four is between the other numbers and the hashes, and then a one and five are outside the numbers. So if you're reading this and you didn't, I don't know what that means. And I know a lot of people just don't have time to ask the question, don't think to ask the question. That's what that means. And it makes it a little bit easier to put in the notes.
To visualize it.
To visualize it, yeah. Yeah, we often work with a visual memory of plays. So often, like, knowing where the play was on the field will help you remember the play itself.
Yeah.
And then this play, it was an inbounds tackle, so it forced this bonsai field goal attempt.
What's a bonsai? Explain that. I don't know that we use that term a lot. Yeah.
So that's a term I picked up from Harbaugh's usage at practice. Is they practice bonsai field goal in the game? They called it a hurricane field goal attempt, and it's where you have to, without a timeout, just run your kicking team on the field to try and kick a field goal at the end of the half or end of the game.
Before the clock runs out.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's always end of half or end of game. And the Ravens practice it all the time. They practice it probably, I would say, almost every single practice that they'll run one play and then they'll run the field goal unit on. Run one play, run the field goal unit on. And I mean, the play they run isn't even a lot of the times run at full speed. They just kind of have a completion. The ball has to be, they have to run up to the, to either run up
to
the line.
Do the players know what's coming?
Yes, the players know it's a bonsai field goal drill session that they're doing. And okay. So the kicker certainly knows it's coming. And in real game, they would know it's coming, right? Because there'd be 15 seconds left or whatever. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, the whoever was announcing the game called it a hurricane field goal. And it's the term here used in Baltimore is bonsai field goal attempt. So anyway, it's kind of a cool thing. And I often will compliment Maureen on just how critical she is to this process for me. But I
think
always
condescending is the term you're looking for.
I often condescend to Maureen. No, I don't. I compliment you, honey. But
I think you're amazed sometimes that a woman would say that.
Oh, don't do this. Don't do this. Now I'm going to have to cut that out. I won't, but I'll have to cut it out. So, but anyway, the point I'm saying is it's not just what you know about the game that really helps me in terms of the quality control for this, but it's the fact that you can put the time in to record all this. One of the problems I have is I can't read my own handwriting. And so, it's a problem. but I can read Maureen's handwriting just fine. And so if we take the, you know, we do the notes together and we do the sheets together and whatnot, then we're in much better shape with that. So
yeah. And the other alternative is to basically be divorced from you during football season, which is 6 months out of the year. So obviously I want to be a part of this.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. It's been something we really enjoy doing together. It's a lot of fun. We've always enjoyed watching the games together. You're a Notre Dame fan from college. You want to tell people about that?
Sure. So I grew up watching Joe Montana, who's a really good quarterback.
They know.
And they know. Yeah. So like the chicken soup game was like the first game that I watched. And it was Cotton Bowl. Notre Dame was losing the game. Joe was not feeling well. They gave him some chicken soup. And I don't know if you know, that game was held in Texas when normally it's pretty warm, but it was like 40 degrees, kind of a cold day. And Joe felt like that chicken soup gave him the energy he needed and the warmth he needed to keep his fingers warm and be able to throw the ball effectively. And they won the game, and I became a football fan that day and ever since. And I basically moved to Maryland because going to games in South Bend, it was freezing cold and it was not fun being outside for some of those games. So I wanted to move to Maryland so I could watch football live outdoors. And it just so happened that the Ravens became a team when you and I first met, and we've been going to games ever since.
It's actually our very first year we met. We met in March. The Ravens played in September of that year. So we've essentially enjoyed the entire 30-year history of the franchise together during that time. And it only took me 22 years to get married. You've been cutting on me all show, honey. It's only fair.
Okay.
All right. If you want to get in touch with Maureen on Twitter, she's at Briard Lover. If you want to hit her up with any question about football or scoring or whatnot, but I'll just leave that
you're
out.
You're more likely to get a response if you DM Ken. I don't check my Twitter.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Other facts out there. Thanks for listening as always. Appreciate always that you'll tune into this show and listen to it, even when it's a little bit of a vaudeville show like it's been today here. But we do appreciate having you listen. Please, if you're on YouTube, like and subscribe. If you're listening to the podcast, and maybe you know someone who doesn't really understand podcasts, help them log on to the website and play it directly off that. That's often a way to enjoy the content and get used to it. And the articles are, of course, out there online. For Maureen, this is Ken saying goodbye, and we'll talk to you next time on Film Stuff.
All right, thanks.